Baby, you are gonna go broke showing turkeys like these.
Now we're talking turkey.
Gobble, gobble, motherfucker.
It's turkey time. Gobble, gobble.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Let's Talk Turkeys. I'm your host, Movie Miss, and you are jumping in on part two, right in the middle of our discussion, my discussion with Nikki Flicks on Transylvania 65000. When we were last here, Gil was accosted by Feos, trying to get him to slip on a banana peel as he was on his way out to go do some investigating. And we are now going to cut to the mayor, up to no good.
It began as a routine assignment.
Transylvania.
Where is that?
I don't know. It's over there someplace.
But beneath the surface.
Transylvania's cute.
Cute.
Of this happy land, horror awaits them.
I'm investigating Frankenstein.
You mean the monster?
And a terrible secret lurks in the shadows.
I'm terribly sorry. We thought you were an animal.
He is.
Now they're discovering the truth.
Did you see Dracula?
Yeah, when it first came out.
About the creatures of the night.
Shut up, you lowlife.
I am low.
I'm lower.
The curse of the undead.
Did you want to hurt me?
Hurt you? No. Bite you?
The terror of the full moon. And the monster that science created.
Full house.
But could not destroy.
Does this hurt? Does this hurt? Good. Everything hurts.
Jeff Goldblum.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Begley Jr.
Hi, ladies.
Joseph Bologna.
Oh.
And Gina Davis.
Tell me you want me too.
For a good time call.
Transylvania 65000.
So then we cut to the mayor going through Gil's room, and he finds that VHS tape labeled Frankenstein Lives. He shoves it in his coat and bumps into Radu in the hall, and he runs off after saying, don't let anybody in the guests' rooms now, Radu. You were just in there.
Yeah, very important.
Cut to Gil outside at a tall stone wall surrounding a large building. He knocks on a metal gate and a guard answers and says only relatives of the guests are allowed in here to visit. Gil says, well, I don't want to see them. I just want to see the doctor. The guard says, well, the doctor only sees people by appointment, and he's not making appointments at this time. It's like, oh, damn it. So Gil walks off, and then we see the sign on the side of the building that says sanatorium. And I had to look that up to see if maybe that was a Eastern European thing, what it means, like, you know, and apparently over there, it's a hybrid of a hospital and a resort is kind of what a sanatorium is. And that makes sense when you see the way the people inside are dressed.
Like an assisted living facility.
Yeah. So after the guard shuts the gate, Gil comes back, pulls himself up on his elbows to peek over the wall and into the yard to see what's going on. But two women approach to pass by. And then we get this little funny bit where it appears that he is hanging on the wall by his elbows because he turns around real quick. Like he's just lounging and hanging there and he's all, hello, ladies. But really, he's got his right foot on a spike that they've inserted into the wall at exactly the right height to make it look like he's just hanging there on his elbows.
I love that his first instinct was to do that instead of just dropping down and walking away.
He could easily have just hopped down. So Gil sees people in robes and pajamas in the yard. Some of them have canes, crutches, they're limping, they're sitting. So yeah, it's more like an assisted living, now that you say that. Next, we see the mayor and the inspector are watching that tape from Gil's room. The mayor says he doesn't like it. And then he's real close to the inspector and he's staring at him. And we get a close-up of the inspector's eye and he's like twitching. His eyes just little, crazy.
Yeah,
twitch.
The little eye twitch. He can't
bizarre.
Take all the stress.
Right?
It's too much stress to handle.
That or he just needs some magnesium. So now Gil and Jack are walking in town and Gil's telling Jack what he saw. That's not an old folks home. That's disabled people and something fishy's going on over there. So they go into the police station. They meet with Inspector Perchek. The mayor's there. The inspector tells them, you know, you hear stories about Transylvania. That's just not us. You know, you guys have stories like this in America. You're Jesse James, you're Dillinger. Those are deep cuts.
Right.
And are we still telling stories about Jesse James? Probably not so much, huh?
Not once in my life have I ever had Jesse James randomly come up in conversation.
Last time I remember of Jesse James anything was the Brady Bunch, when little Bobby has a dream that he's helping Jesse James rob a train. And that was in the 70s.
Right.
So Inspector Perchek tells them, you can't be bothering Dr. Malavacqua with your ludicrous questions. Gil says, well, he can't be that busy because his license was revoked. So what can he possibly be doing? The inspector shuts them down, kicks them out. Jack, however, is being gracious and he's apologizing, shaking their hands. And the mayor tells Gil, you're too serious. You need to lighten up and frolic more. And he like slaps him. I was like, what? That's assault. Don't touch me.
He needs to go out and frolic.
Lighten up. Pick some dance. So outside now, the men agree something is definitely not right here in suburbia. So Jack says, well, I've got a few free hours. Why don't we go see Dr. Malavacqua? And I'm like, you've got a few free hours. What are your priorities here? You're here on this job, sir. This should be your priority. So outside the sanitarium now, Jack and Gil are across the way from the sanitarium. They duck down behind this little waist-high wall. And we get this really funny bit where they go up and down, like in a rhythm. Because people keep coming in and out of the gate. So finally, on the last one, when they pop up, they see the mayor and Inspector Perchek arrive and go inside. Jack says, oh, we need to get in there and hear what's happening. So they go around the back to find a way in. All these people are in their robes and PJs, and there's a robe, a spare robe, like hanging on the barbed wire, like right by the back wall, conveniently. Jack grabs the robe, and I have a question for you on this coming up here. He grabs the robe hanging, tells Gil to put it on. This is how we're going to get in. And Gil's like, why do I have to do it? And he's like, you're the one that most resembles a mental patient or something like that.
Yeah.
You're the most believable, or I don't know what he says. So he tells Gil, climb over the gate. And Gil's like, wait, what if I get electrified? What if it's electrified? So Jack grabs a handkerchief out of his pocket real quick, grabs Gil's hand and puts it on the fence. And he goes, see, you're fine. It's not electrified. My question is, what? Because a handkerchief, that conducts electricity. It's like clothing.
Yeah, but Jack's just an asshole. He's not going to test it himself. He's going to put Gil in harm's way.
But wouldn't make him feel better about it.
Of course he would. It's him being petty. In case you haven't noticed, this man is very snarky and very petty. And so him grabbing the handkerchief to grab Gil's hand to put it on the possibly electrified fence is just him being petty.
It's just a dick move.
It is a dick move, but his plan works and is kind of brilliant.
It always makes me laugh, though, because, again, the word we keep using, it's just silly. So Gil is climbing up over to get in, and you hear Jack yell, patient trying to get out. And so this female guard, who reminded me a lot, looking like a Nazi, not going to lie, her get up, comes over and pulls Gil down off the gate. And she's like, I don't recognize you. You must be new. Didn't you get your sedation today? I'm like, oh, my God, they're sedating all these people.
Yeah, which is why Jack is going along with all of this, because he's looking at the whole situation with this hospital and thinking, maybe we really do have some sort of story here. Because, you know, if this hospital is misrepresenting itself, or it's abusing people or mistreating people. So now he's into it and he's willing to do whatever it takes. To a certain point, he's willing to put Gil in a lot of harm's way. Let's just say that.
So I laugh too, because when she goes, didn't you get your sedation today? The captioning said, didn't you get your observation today? Like, well, you're observing him right now.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, the inspector and the mayor meet with Dr. Malavacqua. And this is the amazing Joseph Bologna. Whenever this man shows up in anything, I'm always like, yay.
He's great. And I think it's all thanks to rags to riches is why we have a love for this man. I do have to say, though, he's the only so-called Transylvanian that appears to not be able to do this accent at all. He sounds like a New Yorker who is attempting to do an Italian accent and then is trying to be an Italian who's trying to do a Transylvanian accent. That's what he sounds like. It's this very muddied Italian / Transylvanian / New Yorker thing. But I totally forgive it, because he has great presence. He has great screen presence. He's very good.
I was just going to say, his performance for me, yeah, gives him a pass on the accent, but I totally get what you're saying. I see mm-hmm. it too. It's bad. So the doc asks them why they're so worried about his experiments all of a sudden. And the inspector says two reporters are nosing around asking questions about a Frankenstein monster. So we're concerned. The doc says, well, that's ridiculous. And he says, my patient, Hunyadi, who matches that description, is deceased. So I don't know what you're worried about. They look at the file. And the inspector sees two other files and he says their name. Oh, I'm sorry, three other files. He says their names out loud. He's like, oh, are these people John Vlad, Patrick Glenn, and Odette Barlow? Are they all deceased as well? And the doctor's like, yep, all deceased. So then we see Gil pop up outside the office just as the mayor and the inspector are leaving. And I guess he can overhear the doc call the castle because it doesn't look like he should be able to hear them. So we get Feos dancing to the Transylvania 65,000 song as the phone rings.
I love it. And for this reason, my first cell phone, many, many moons ago, the kind that you could create your own ringtone. If you had any musical ability at all, you could go in there. I must have spent 2 hours getting my phone to play this song when it rang, just so when my phone rang, I could do the little Feos dance.
Yes!
I will happily admit that.
Hey, there is no shame in that. the best part would be having it ring and have somebody else recognize it. That'd be the trick, right? So the doc asks for Radu, and Feos doesn't understand. He doesn't see. Radu is right behind him, and he screams for him. Luckily, so we can get this little physical bit of Radu getting so startled that he's almost going to fall over the table. And one leg comes up and he's right and he almost falls, but doesn't. It's this weird comedic bit that totally works for me. So Dr. Malavacqua asks Radu, go to the laboratory and check to see if Hunyadi is there. Gil runs back out to Jack, out to the gate. And he says, how am I going to get out of here? And Jack's like, hang the robe up and go to the front. And Gil's like, are you crazy? The guard up there knows me. And Jack's like, yes, that's exactly why you need to do this. Trust me. And Gil goes, why do I always have to do the trusting?
This is one of my favorite exchanges between Jack and Gil is when Jack says, or Gil says, why should I trust you? And Jack asks, are you a middle child? He says, yeah. And he says, so? And then that's it. They just move on from there.
As if the middle child is disposable. Like that.
Yes.
That's fine.
Right. Or that should the middle child should just blindly trust and follow. It's hilarious because it's the equivalent of somebody going, look over there in that moment, because him asking him that and getting him thinking about that just distracts him. And then he's just going to go along with it. It's so, so silly.
So up front now, Gil hops the wall. And just as he's like halfway up, Jack yells, man trying to get in. So the guard comes over, grabs Gil and escorts him out the front gate. Pretty
brilliant.
Genius.
The plan to get in and out of this place was actually brilliant.
All Jack. So as they're walking away now, Jack asks Gil if he's got anything or did you get anything or did I waste my expertise on dilly dally? I love it. He's so snarky. Gil says the doc called Radu. There's something about a lab and find Hunyadi. Gil really thinks they're onto something. Something's going on. Jack says, well, I'll meet you at the castle later because right now I've got something to do. And he's going to take off. And Gil's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm going to a picnic. And off he goes. I guess his excitement about maybe having a story doesn't compare to the thought of possibly getting some ass, getting laid.
Well, that's what he meant when he said he had a few free hours. He knew he had this date later in the day. So he had a couple hours to kill. Why not do his job?
So we cut to the inspector and the mayor exhuming Kurt Hunyadi's casket in the cemetery to find a janky looking bald female mannequin inside. And the mayor goes, it's a lady doll. That makes me laugh every time because it's so weird the way he says it.
Right. And then tells the guy, put it in my car.
And they all look at him like, put it in your car. It's evidence. Why does the mayor need evidence? Okay. Back at the castle now, Radu and Loopy are running down a hall and Loopy stops and opens a closet and Gil comes running up the hall, shuts the door and Loopy falls and Gil and Radu run off. This poor woman.
She just keeps getting literally pushed aside. It's so funny.
So Radu goes down to a room. Gil follows. In this room, Gil finds a painting on the wall moving, and Feos' head pops out suddenly. And then he's wearing these goofy looking glasses, and he startles Gil. Gil asks, where is Radu? Phaos is like, I don't know. And he grabs Gil's necktie and tells him, come inside. He's barely got his head peeking out of where this painting is. How is Gil going to get in there?
And the glasses. I don't know why. It's just, this doesn't make any sense. What the hell is Phaos doing? He must do this on the regular. He just has all these little spots around the castle where he can just hang out and do whatever bullshit comes to mind. Like, I picture him sitting inside this little room behind that painting, wearing those glasses, talking to that little doll with the goatee. Like, that's just him living his best life every day. It's so weird.
So the painting comes down on Phaos' neck and he lets out this weird, crazy scream as Gil runs off. I don't know where that scream comes from. It's bizarre.
The whole moment is just bizarre and appears to not serve any purpose. I love that. These little moments that just don't serve the story at all. And they just don't make any sense. It to me, it's so funny.
So Gil runs off. He hears noise in the library, goes in, but there's nobody there. He turns around and then a lady vampire comes out of the bookcase. Secret passage there. I want one of those in my house so bad. She says she is Odette and she loves him and wants him. And he falls back into a chair. She climbs on his lap, starts kissing his face, licking him and touching him all over. He panics. Now, I am all for no means no. But come on, really? You're turning this down? She's all over him. And he's like, no, 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 no. I don't get it at all. No man is going to go. Gina Davis wants me? No, thank you.
I think it's a momentary lapse in judgment on his part because you can tell that he's trying to get out of it, but then he's also kind of excited about turning around and going back to talk to her again because he's kind of like, well, what am I doing here? You got to remember he's so silly and naive and childlike. How would a teenager respond to a girl coming on that strong out of nowhere? He probably doesn't get hit on all that often. This might be a new experience for him. He's got a lack of experience, I think.
I think so. He panics. He knocks on the floor, so it sounds like the door to scare her off. It works because she jumps up and disappears, and then he turns around and is bummed, yeah, that she's not there. Then he hears some noises, mechanical sounding noises from behind a door. He opens it to find Phaos riding this coin-operated dog that looks like Pluto, but with spots all over it.
So you remember earlier when you said, this ain't no Disneyland?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. There is a ride.
Oh my God, this little coin-operated deal.
This is even better than him behind the painting wearing the glasses. What the fuck is he doing? How did he get that in there? And why? And he says, what are you doing? And I think my favorite thing that comes out of Michael Richards' mouth in the entire movie, I'm meditating.
On this toy in a closet with a black and white picture of himself taped to the wall behind him.
I noticed that too. It looked like he taped up his own headshot. I swear to God, he just went, okay, so I need you to go get me a coin operated kitty ride. The kind that you see in front of the grocery store. I'm going to stick it in this closet. I got an idea.
Right?
It's so stupid.
So, okay. So this is happening. And then Gil is like not amused. And he goes, hey, did you see Dracula? Phaos says, yeah, yeah. When it first came out, not the film, the person. And of course, my brain went to, wait, Dracula? That's like in the 30s. Well, the most recent one to this would have been the 79 Dracula with Frank Langella. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a pass. That's pretty funny. So as Gil is going to leave, Phaos is like, wait, wait. And he throws his actual leg up into the door. And Gil grabs it because he thinks it's fake. And Phaos falls to the floor and he just walks off and just drags him off. That's my favorite, is when he just drags him off. I'm like, are you serious? So next we see Radu and Lupi go outside, down to a door under the castle. They bump into Dr. Malavacqua. He tells Radu he doesn't have to keep calling him master. And Radu tries, but it doesn't work. He's just got to call everybody master. They go inside into an underground laboratory dungeon-looking situation. The doc puts on his white lab coat. Lupi and Radu put on their little coats. And they cross this doorway threshold into the actual lab area. And this is where Dr. Malavacqua's demeanor suddenly changes. And I love how he transforms himself every time.
The full-on, yeah, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde bit. I noticed when he first steps in, the minute it starts and he gets that crazy look on his face and he messes up his hair, there's this weird music noise that starts in the background. This just weird kind of rumbling, unsettling tone starts every time. So you know when he's in the laboratory or not in the laboratory based on this audio cue. It's really smart. And it only occurred to me the last couple times I watched the movie that it's there and that it's a setup, basically.
Yeah, it the Jekyll Hyde thing, it never occurred to me early on that that's kind of what they're going for. But later on, I was like, oh, obviously, because the mad scientist vibe, but also the Dr. Frankenstein vibe sort of too. So he rants about his poor father, the scientist. He must clear the name of Malevacqua because his father devoted his life to trying to cure the common cold, but instead will forever be known as the man who brought herpes to Sicily. And I'm like, I wonder if that was in the script, because that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I have a feeling it wasn't, like many of the other best lines of this movie. And now you're looking at this, the whole mad doctor thing, and realizing why he was cast. Because it is beyond brilliant what he does, the way that he completely transforms and changes. And if you notice in these scenes where he's being the mad doctor, the accent's almost completely gone altogether. Now he's not even bothering because he's so in it. And I don't even care anymore.
So Malevacqua discovers Hunyadi's cell is empty, and Radu explains he had to let him out because he is my master. I have to let him do what he wants. So he yells at Radu and Lupi while he's getting them in headlocks, and he calls them matrimonial masochists and then laughs crazily. I love it so much. And then he's like, wait, I have to grab my notes. So he has to go through the doorway to get his notes out of his other coat pocket. And he completely like fixes his hair and he's all calm. And he's like, this is the first of several times we get this back and forth stuff. And it's so funny.
Well, yeah, but when he goes out there, that noise goes away and suddenly he smooths his hair and then his posture changes. And he's like, oh, you guys work so hard. Sit down, take a break. Do you want some espresso? he's gonna make them a drink, you know? And then the second he steps in, it just completely changes again. And now you're starting to look at Radu and you understand why he has such a hard time stopping calling everybody master. It's because he is constantly back and forth with this guy. One minute he's telling him, oh, you work too hard. Don't call me master. You're the best. I love you. And then the next minute this guy flips and is screaming at him.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, these two are in an abusive relationship with this doctor and they're constantly being belittled and berated. No wonder they are the way they are.
That's true. Suddenly we're on the Dr. Phil show. Where did that happen?
I know. Leave it to me to psychoanalyze everything to death.
So the doc now realizes that he's back in the lab. He sees Odette has also gone missing. Her chains are empty. And Radu points out, well, at least your favorite is still here. His favorite is looking like a mummy. It's a person wrapped all in bandages in this cement stone coffin. Weird, very weird. Radu asks the doctor if he wants to wait for lightning to do more experiments, to which the doctor responds, you know I don't like lightning. I work with all this other shit. I hate lightning. Puh, puh. Cut to Jack and Elizabeth on their picnic date in the forest, and little Laura, her daughter, is skipping around nearby. Jack tries to schmooze Elizabeth, leans in for a kiss, but is cock-blocked by the brim of Elizabeth's hat. This big, obnoxious hat.
It seems very intentional on her part.
Oh, 100%.
She's trying to keep him at arm's length.
Well, because he goes in for a second time, and she quickly grabs a banana and takes a bite right as he's leaning in for that kiss. He can't take a hint because she's like, with her mouth full of banana, go ahead, I'm listening. And he's like, no, I'll wait. Clearly, she's trying not to kiss you right now, bro. Like, get the hint.
But she's also sending mixed signals because this is their second date now. Mm-hmm. At this point is when I would give him a pass. He keeps pushing because she's clearly reciprocating a little bit. Why would she be out on yet another date with him if she really wasn't at all interested? She likes the little cat and mouse thing.
Slim pickings in Transylvania, I think, from what we've seen.
Yeah.
So suddenly Gil runs up and asks to speak to Jack. Elizabeth says, that's fine. I got to go find Laura anyway. Gil tells Jack he was accosted by a half-naked Lady Dracula who nearly swallowed his face.
She really did.
He so overreacts, though. Like, the police chief almost killed him. Dracula almost swallowed his face. Like, I wouldn't believe this man either. So Jack rants and gets upset. All the stupidity, he can't take it. He starts to strangle Gil and he briefly gets him to the ground. Poor Gil is clueless as to why this is happening. Like, he really genuinely doesn't understand, and asks Jack if he's angry once they get back up. And Jack says, was I angry? Was I? And he grabs him again and starts strangling him again and gets him to the ground.
I don't know where it comes from. Is it a quote? Is it something he made up? I don't get it. But when he goes to strangle him, he starts going, for 35 years, I washed your clothes. Listen to your stories, put up with your crap. He's like singing this song as he's strangling Ed Begley Jr. And he has it's this little smile. Yeah, he has this little smile on his face the second time he does it. And that is another thing that makes you think this entire thing is ad-libbed. Like, they didn't have a plan. Jack's going to listen while Gil tells him what's going on and then just react by getting mad. And that's it. That's all that was on the page, because him strangling him just seems so like, whoa, okay. He went from 0 to 60, didn't he? But that weird little song he starts singing while he's doing yes. it, that's a very Jeff Goldblum thing.
Okay, this better be good. I was following Radu when out of nowhere, I was accosted by Lady Dracula. She was half naked and she nearly swallowed my face. Here. You know, Gil, I don't blame you anymore. I blame myself. I'm the one who came along on this misguided mission. The infantile stupidity.
It's not.
First, the chief of police attacks you.
He did. Right?
By your face. Yeah, then we go to a gypsy camp. Some phony gypsy camp. It's the story of your life, right?
Lead.
Turns us both into peeping Toms. Then last
one
night,
mistake.
The Avon lady strikes.
Oh, it's so
the
spooky.
The minute you come in,
she's
gone.
Right
now,
you...
the day a woman eats your head.
Not a woman.
What are you trying
woman.
To do? You want to kill me?
No, I love
kill
you, Jack.
You love me? If this is love, hate me, please, because I hate your guts.
I don't hate you.
For 35 years, I've washed your clothes.
Don't talk like that.
Listen to your stories. I've put up with your crap.
That's
now
tight.
That we're here, I'm going to wring your neck.
No, Elizabeth!
So at this point, all the buffoonery with them has ended, and we cut over to little Laura wandering off in the woods. Elizabeth is looking for her, doesn't find her. She bumps into our Frankenstein, Hunyadi, here in the woods, but we don't get to see what happens. Yeah, she goes to scream, and he puts his hand over her mouth. So at the moment, you're like, oh.
Exactly. They should have put that on the little, you know, parents' warning that the little girl is in peril. She could be in danger. Don't let your children see this.
So Elizabeth comes back now, tells Jack and Gil she cannot find Laura. So they all run off and split up to look for her. Then they come back together after not finding her. And Jack says, Elizabeth, you need to go to town. And it's funny because for a second, I'm almost with her because she goes, well, I need to look for my little girl. Send him. Send Gil. And Jack makes a good point. He's like, he can cover more ground than you can. So maybe we should look for her and you just go get the police. I think it's funny that this whole time she's, like you said, mixed signals, but also not giving in to him, like kind of cock blocking him his whole time trying to hit on her. And mm-hmm. yet he's still willing. You go to town. We got this. And they're going to look for her little girl. He's still going to do this for her.
They're not bad people. They're idiots, but they're not bad people.
I love that though. Yeah, that's very sweet that he's still willing to do that. So Gil now climbs a tree at the water's edge to see if he can see far away where the little girl is.
I don't know why he needs to do that. The man is like 7 feet tall. Him and Jeff Gold, they're both like ridiculously tall. Why does he need to climb a tree? Well, he needs to climb a tree so that he can climb back down the tree, because that's very important.
It is. And if you pay attention to the right side of your screen, you can see his waist and butt as he's climbing down the tree. They start to jut out like way far away from the tree. And you're like, what is happening? He climbs down onto Hunyadi, who's standing up against the tree. And he is face to face with what he thinks is the Frankenstein monster. So he freaks out in this really hilarious little scene of facial expressions and whimpering. That's the only way I can describe it.
My favorite thing about it is it's dead silent. There's no other noise other than him reacting, and they just let it marinate. I feel like they just, no sound, no music, nothing, just him quietly sobbing. And then at one point he lays his head down on Hunyadi's chest, and then he looks up again, like, is he really still there? And then he goes back down again. Like, he just needs a hug right now, even if it's from the monster himself. Like, it's so silly.
It's very childlike.
Yeah.
So he climbs down off of Hunyadi, who doesn't do anything. He just stands there. And he backs into the water. And again, if you pay attention and look down into the water, you can see like black under the surface. So there's a dude in black spandex, like under the water there, because he steps back and all of a sudden you see this hand come up out of the water and grab Gil right in the junk and squeeze so hard. And the scream that Ed Begley lets out.
I love the close up of his face. He's screaming and then he stops, takes a breath and screams even harder. And nowhere in your little parent warning was there anything about somebody's junk getting grabbed like this, because they probably should have said something about it. You don't want your kid seeing this. I remember seeing this as a kid and being like, I wonder if it's really that big of a deal. I wonder if it really hurts that much. I wonder what it's like.
I know, that's the thing about not having a cock and balls. You just constantly want to ask people who do. Is that real? Does that really hurt that bad?
Does it really hurt that? I mean, I guess if you think about it, you know, I mean, if our reproductive organs were in a gentle little sack outside of our body, it might hurt if somebody squeezes them or kicks them, or it makes sense. I love his face here and the scream, that really high-pitched scream that he lets out. I love how he takes that breath so he can really get into it and let out that scream completely. It's so dumb.
So then we cut away from that because Gil climbs out of the water and runs off. We see Jack stumbling upon what appears to be the Wolfman. And he lets out this insane scream, which I did not think Goldblum was capable of.
It's glorious. He can't be outdone by Ed Begley Jr. So he has to do it too. But when he does it, he has this weird like deadpan look on his face. And he just opens his mouth and screams, but his eyes don't react at all. It's really weird. Like, God bless Jeff Goldblum. It's one of the strangest screams I've ever seen in a quote horror movie or in a scary situation on film. It's really weird.
It's worth watching just for these weird bits, for sure.
Yeah.
So they tussle, he and the Wolfman, and then Gil comes running over and jumps on the back of the Wolfman, and he runs off with Gil on his back.
Carrying him piggyback, yeah.
And just then, the inspector and the mayor and some cops show up and startle Jack, and he says, Laura's lost in the woods. You know, the Wolfman was just here. Like, it's this whole big thing. And they're like, yeah, we're going to the wine festival, so arrest this man. And the cops grab Jack, and you're like, wait, what? Okay, little girl's missing, but you're going to go to the wine festival.
They have important things to do. But my favorite part of the scene is when Jack's trying to explain it, and the mayor says, oh, tell it to the Marines. What is that another one of his little American quotes that we must all say all the time? That doesn't make any sense. But again, another thing that I still quote to this day. I say that all the time when somebody's trying to explain something to me. Oh, tell it to the Marines.
They probably look at you the same way, like, what?
It's so stupid. Yeah.
So the mayor then, after Jack gets hauled off, asks the inspector, shouldn't we alert the townspeople of what's going on? He says, no, absolutely not. We don't want to start a panic. Okay, I'm kind of on board with that. And then at the lab now, we see the doc and Radu and Loopy and the Wolfman are all hovering around poor Gil, who is passed out, strapped down on a gurney. The Wolfman is growling at the doc loudly, and he goes, ah, knock off that growling crap, to the Wolfman. And he asks him, why did you bring Gil here? And the Wolfman very calmly says, I couldn't get the dude off my back.
I love the change from the growling to this. He has this really, and he sounds American, but he has this really like mellow, almost like surfer dude type voice that you are really not expecting. It's really weird.
So that's actor Donald Gibb. And yeah, I absolutely love him as the Wolfman.
Okay. Question. Is he Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds? Because I thought I recognized his voice. I didn't look to see who the actor is. I'm very, very adept for some reason at picking out voices and knowing what actor they belong to. voiceovers on commercials or animated things. I like eerily good at it. And I swear to you, that is the guy who plays Ogre in Revenge of the Nerds.
It is. You are correct. It is.
Oh, okay. I just won this imaginary contest with myself.
And what's your prize?
My prize is I'm right. I love being right.
Yep, that's him. The doc asks the Wolfman, why did you attack the other guy? My question was, how did he know that he did that? Because Gil's passed out. Gil hasn't told them anything.
That's your question?
The Wolfman says...
That's your question, really?
I've got many, but that's one, yeah. The Wolfman says, I was taking a whiz and he scared me. Or he startled me. What? So you attack him?
There are logical explanations for everything that's happening if people would just calm the fuck down and ask.
Now, see, asking questions, very important. I'm doing God's work.
This guy found himself a good tree and he was taking a whiz.
So Radu gets the Wolfman into a cell and he starts taunting the doc. The Wolfman's like, you know, doc, I like the pound better. I dig your frizzy hairdo, doc. And he's like saying all these random things. And then the man in black spandex, who had grabbed Gil in the nuts, comes in. And one arm is wrapped around, like oddly contorted around his body. The doc asks him, why did you grab that reporter by the culones? And he says culones, but the captioning said cojones. So I'm wondering if culones is a word and I just don't know it.
We'd have to ask Joseph Bologna. I don't know.
Do we have a phrase book?
Do we have a phrase book? I don't understand.
But also, how did he know that happened? He wasn't there.
Apparently, he has seen this movie. That's how.
So the guy says, well, because he stepped on me. And then the doc starts mocking him. He stepped on me, blah, blah, blah. And the Wolfman chimes in and the doc tells him, oh, you shut up. And then he goes, up yours, Harry. And the Wolfman goes, I'll tear every bit of hair you have out of your ass. I was like, well, parental guide forgot that one.
That was the moment when I knew for sure this had to be the guy who played Ogre. Had to be him.
So we see Odette is now back and chained up to the wall near Gil on the gurney. She pleads for the doctor not to hurt Gil. She says she needs him. She loves him. And the doc goes, what do you know about love, nympho knees? And then he adds, if he didn't have her chained up to the wall, no man in town would be safe. And my thought was, is that really a problem the men are complaining about? Gina Davis wants to fuck them. Is this a problem?
You know, just to play devil's advocate, perhaps he's trying to do everyone a favor by keeping this somewhat rapey woman off the streets. She is a little handsy. Yeah, she comes on a little too strong, and she'd probably be doing it to every, you know, Dick, Joe, and Harry that's walking down the street because she's just in love with Ed Begley Jr. at first sight.
I just feel like, is keeping her chained to a wall really the solution to her problem?
Yeah, this guy has a few screws loose. I think we've established that. I do think maybe his heart's in the right place.
So the doc starts yelling at everyone because, you know, the police are breathing down my neck, so nobody gets to leave anymore. He sends Radu and Loopy to find Hunyadi and bring him back. Then we cut to Jack in a small little, like, 5x5 cell, poor guy, asking the guard, how long are you going to keep me in here? And the guard says, how do you Americans say? Until the cows come home. And then he laughs and gets smashed over the head by a wine bottle.
Yes.
We were warned.
Elizabeth, the badass in her wine bottle. I'm here for it.
I did love that she has to come to his rescue.
Yes.
So she lets Jack out of the cell, and he tells her that the police are at the wine festival instead of looking for Laura. She says, well, I'm going over there to beat a few heads.
I love it. I love it so much. Give me a strong, pissed off woman.
Then we cut to Jack running into Madame Morovia's because they left the jail there. He tells her, we found the man in the bushes. She confirms, yes, that is my husband. That wasn't the wolf man. You did find him. He's a wolf. But he's not the wolf man. Jack says, well, where can I find the wolf man? And Madame Morovia says, go to the castle, jump off the bridge, and swim down to the door. And he's like, but there's no water.
And she says, then don't jump.
Duh. Then we cut to Hunyadi and little Laura. Where they got a deck of cards, I don't know. But they're sitting in a stable barn area playing cards. Loopy and Radu come in and quietly, with some chloroform, Radu sneaks up behind Hunyadi, tries to jump on him and chloroform him. And then they end up having this insane physical thing that happens as Hunyadi's trying to stomp around and get away. Poor Radu gets his head put through beams and gets tossed around on the floor.
At one point, he's has his legs wrapped around Hunyadi, and then his torso is like dragging on the ground. Like he was up on his back and then he laid back and fell. I've never seen somebody injure themselves while trying to attack someone who did nothing to warrant being attacked. It's just like karma, karma, karma. The way that he just throws him through the door and he lands in a pile of shit out there.
And then Loopy runs up with a rope and tries to run around Hunyadi and wrap his knees up to tip him over. And he falls right on top of her. And I like that he's supposed to be passed out from the chloroform at this point. It finally took effect, but his eyes are wide open. That was super creepy to me. I'm like, is he dead? So then they take little Laura and Hunyadi to the lab, where Malavacqua chains Hunyadi up in a cell. Jack shows up. He sees Gil and the mummy side by side on gurneys now. He runs over to Gil. He sees he's fine and that they just took some blood from him. They say that. I don't know why. What, for the mummy, maybe?
Yeah, I noticed this just because I was paying such close attention to things I don't normally care about. One of them makes a comment, AB positive. That's like the rarest type of blood in the world. So maybe that the woman and the, well, we know it's a woman, but the mummy needs that type of blood. And when they were testing him, checking him out to see if he was okay, they realized that he has this very rare blood type. So why not let him do an unconsented blood donation? That's a little sketchy, but it's not going to hurt him. They're not hurting him.
Gil wakes up and he says, oh my gosh, this is going to make one hell of a story. And the doc is like, whoa, what? No stories here. And he has Radu attack Jack. He's like, go get him. So Jack gets back into the Wolfman's cell, who grabs him. And he's like, I got you now, you communist. Which, what?
And then Jack grabs the Wolfman's hand and you hear him go, ow, my pinky.
He pulls a fucking hair right out of his fucking hand. Yes. Or I wrote in my notes, pluck the hair out of his paw. But, you know,
yeah,
whichever. So Gil gets pushed now into Odette, and she starts touching him, and he's trying to undo his belts to get off of this gurney. She's kissing him, and he's yelling, help, help, help. Twisty guy in the spandex here grabs a hold of Jack as he's chasing the doc. Then the doc tosses Radu at Jack, and he throws him back. And did you notice that both times he's getting tossed back and forth, Loopy's just running alongside him?
Because she refuses to let him go through it alone. It's so weird, but it's so cute.
It's so adorable.
She's just so in character. She's giving him moral support.
So then on the second pass, Radu gets tossed into this coffin and he's hanging out in there. And he says to Loopy, go get Laura. Go get the little girl. So she takes off. Jack and the doc tussle. And we see Odette tell Gil, you need to get the doc out of the lab. That's the trick to calm him down. So Gil yells, Jack, get him out of here. He gets him through the doorway. And of course, we see the doc calms completely down, which we expect at this point. He walks away and it happens again. He comes in and he goes all transformation. Jack gets him out again. And on the third go around of this, Jack grabs the doc, gets him farther away and keeps him away from the doorway.
I have to say, I don't know if it's another captioning blunder or if it's really what he says, because I can't quite tell. It's so fast when they're arguing and going in and out. But in the captions, at one point, when the doctor's inside the lab and he's being crazy, he calls Jack a fart butt. That is what came up in the closed captioning. He says, get over here, fart butt. What? I backed it up and watched it again because I thought I misread it, and I tried to hear it and see, is that really it does sound like that's what he said, but I can't confirm. We'd have to ask them. I don't know, but yeah, fart butt.
Oh my god. I hope that's what he's saying.
Right.
So then Odette, we see, starts to undo Gil's belt on his pants because he asked for help undoing his belts. His fault, he didn't clarify. Cunyati then is waking up now in his cell. He breaks the door off. Lupi brings Laura in, and Cunyati sees her, busts over to her, picks her up, and leaves. Jack isn't strong enough to stop him. He one-handed just disposes of Jack down those stairs. It's like, damn, this dude's really fucking strong. So maybe he is a Frankenstein monster. I don't know. So then the doc says he knows he's going to town, so we've got to all get there, and I'll explain everything to you on the way, he says to Jack. So now we're in for the slam bang finish here. We cut to the fancy dancers on the stage at the wine festival.
Okay, this wine festival looks dope as fuck. I want to go. It looks so fun. I am half expecting Clark Griswold to jump up on stage in his lederhosen and start slapping dudes. Like, this looks like exactly what you would expect if you were visiting a European country, is to see something like this. I kind of want to go and sip some wine with Elizabeth and get a little crazy and beat a few heads. That's what I want for my next vacation.
Yeah, in my notes, I just wrote in capital letters, looks like a hell of a time.
Right, yes.
So the doc, Jack, and Gil hop into his car and rush off. And then we see Twisty, as the doc calls him, the little pretzel guy, Wolfman, Odette, Feos, the mummy in the coffin, Lupi, and Radu all climb into a horse-drawn carriage and head to town. But before they take off, the Wolfman must primp. Da, 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 going into town is the little song he's singing.
He wants to look pretty. Everybody's going to see him.
His fucking hairspraying his whole face. So funny. So then we see Cunyati is walking, holding little Laura, and we hear her say in voiceover, I'm sleepy. And she lays her head down, and they keep walking. Then back at the wine festival, Elizabeth approaches the mayor and the inspector at their table, demands that they go look for Laura right now, not when the festival's over. I'm with her. That's bullshit.
Definitely. Yeah, she has every right to be pissed off. And for a moment before things go sideways, they stand up and start grabbing her like they're about to arrest her. Seriously? Her kid's missing. You guys are sitting around getting drunk instead of doing anything about it. She's mad, rightfully so, and you're going to arrest her? Are you kidding me? I have to talk about when you saw Cunyati carrying Laura and she started saying she was getting sleepy. A couple minutes before that, you saw him walking through the woods like it's a very long trek, and he had her up on his shoulders.
That's right.
Like a dad carrying his kid. And I'm thinking to myself at that point, he is the best babysitter this little girl's probably ever had. He is the best person to have around your children in this entire movie. They played poker. She's getting piggyback rides. He's letting her take a little nap. He's bringing her back to her mom all safe and sound. Like, what has he done that isn't 100% wholesome? Just tell me, please. Because it looks like he should be getting Babysitter of the Year award right now.
100%. The whole thing here, as they're, like you said, they start to grab her like they're going to haul her off. The whole festival comes to a screeching halt when a woman lets out a blood-curdling scream and yells Frankenstein at the top of her lungs. Cunyati approaches, carrying Laura, and lays her down on the ground. And then here comes Elizabeth, looking pleased that here's her daughter, and she gently, slowly comes up and picks her up, and she's looking up at Cunyati like, don't hurt me, you know, and it's so sweet.
She's the only one looking at him with caution and confusion, a little curiosity, like, okay, who's this guy? What's his deal? What's going on here? Everybody else is screaming and looking at him like he's some kind of monster. It's like, wait a minute. Why are you screaming bloody murder that it's Frankenstein? You have no idea what's going on. Calm your tits.
So Inspector Perchek says, don't let the monster get away. So some cops bum rush him and he stops them all. Then some townspeople light torches and surround him. And did you notice that the second the inspector goes, light the torches, all of a sudden the mayor has flipped out his Zippo like in 2 seconds, like, boop, he's like ready to go.
Oh, yeah. Like they've just been waiting for this moment to do this. And it's funny because I remember as a kid wanting to watch this because it had monsters and that looked cool. And then loving it because it was funny. But also the message that they're starting to try to send here really resonated with me and was pretty progressive for its time. Turns out the whole point of the story is the dangers of fearing what you don't understand, jumping to conclusions, mob mentality, judging people by their appearance is dangerous and can lead to really bad things. Like, that was kind of the overall message that you're starting to see here. That really hit home with me as a kid, and it's a big part of why I loved this movie. Anybody who ever felt kind of like a weirdo or an outsider, those kind of themes really hit home for you. So it's not just about the incredible comedy. To me, I love the little message that they're sending here.
Didn't know you were getting that from your 80s movie, did you?
Seriously, yeah, right? It just kind of comes out of nowhere that you start to realize, oh my God, is that really what they're going for? That's actually kind of beautiful. I love that.
Well, we'll discuss that more as everybody gets unveiled here, because I've got some questions mm-hmm. for you. So they managed to get Hunyadi up onto this makeshift pyre here, tied up between two statues, it looks like. Dr. Malavacqua and everybody arrives. He runs over and stops them from setting fire to this, to Hunyadi. Gil and Jack rush over to Elizabeth in the crowd. Malavacqua starts yelling, "This is not Frankenstein, this is Kurt Hunyadi," and he gets shut down by the inspector. Then Jack jumps up and the cops start to grab him, but Elizabeth to the rescue.
She found another wine bottle and she's ready to go. I love it.
I like how she breaks it over whoever, however she breaks it. And then she goes, "Do you want to eat some glass?" And she's like shoving it. She has that crazy look in her eye. I'd back off as well.
Right.
Jack yells to everyone, "Kurt was mangled in a car accident." As he's trying to talk and yell, we've got Begley in the crowd. Here's Gil grabbing people's toupees and scarves and trying to like make himself, and he changes his voice. "Let's hear him out. Yeah, let's hear what he has to say," and all this stuff. And he gets mm-hmm. the crowd like roused and agreeing with him.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is the best funny bit of this part here, is him just trying to get everybody on board.
Well, he finally made himself useful.
Yes. So Dr. Malavacqua jumps up and says he didn't have any money to fix him properly. He had to use nuts and bolts and the like, because the mayor and the police pocket the money that the government gives them to fix Hunyadi. My question was, the government would give you money to fix up a car accident victim? What?
If you have some sort of socialized health care, yes.
Oh.
Yet another thing that seems a little ahead of its time with this movie is him standing there saying the government sends money to help people like him who maybe don't have private insurance or something. And, you know, this money was supposed to help people who were injured in the hospital and they were taking it. And he's pointing that out. And instead of just, you know, letting the guy die, he took matters into his own hands. I mean, obviously his methods are gross and illegal and not okay.
Highly questionable. Yeah.
Yeah. Highly questionable, but potentially a heart of gold. Yeah, I can see it. He was trying to help the guy. And it makes you realize like, oh, that's what's been going on. That's why they didn't want anybody to know about the doctor. That's why they took away his license. Not because he was doing terrible things, but because they wanted to shut him up.
Amen. And then, of course, the inspector chimes in. "Well, should we take the word of these, you know, disgraced doctor and foreigners?" And Gil fucks up his crowd rallying when he goes, "No, no." And everybody starts going, "No." And he's like, "Oh shit, I didn't mean that. Yes, yes." "We should believe them. Yes."
We tried to let him have his little moment of redemption and he screwed it up.
So then Jack and the doc get pulled down and the carriage arrives with everybody else. The inspector says, "And inside here is more of his experiments," or something, trying to say shit about the, you know, everybody. The Wolfman jumps out. Jack comes over and says, "Calm down. This is not the Wolfman. This is actually Lawrence Malbert Jr. And he has hypertrichosis. I didn't look that up. I'm going to assume it's a real condition."
It is. Okay. It is. And I've studied medical terminology. Don't ask why. So I happen to know that, yes, that phrase would mean an abundance of hair, too much hair. And it is a real medical condition.
And the doc is treating it with electrolysis.
And I love when he lifts up his shirt and he's got that big bald patch.
Yes.
And you can hear him. He goes, "I can go to the beach now."
And then Madame Morovia, they say she spread the lies because she was so ashamed of her son because he looks like that. And she comes over and she's like so apologetic, and God bless him, the son is like, "It's okay." "Oh, mom." And I like when they're walking away, he's all, "You stink." So the mayor opens up that casket on the back and out pops the mummy. Mm-hmm. Radu and Loopy cut the bandages off as Jack yells, "Do you all remember Ugly Hattie?" Is this a problem? They have like the town ugly, I guess.
This moment and the little backstory of the mummy, this is when my getting excited about the message of the movie falls flat on its face. They ruin it with this. Completely ruin it.
Yeah, so the doc prompts Phaos to remind everybody how Hattie used to look. And we get rubber face Michael Richards here. And then the doc says, "But don't worry, because I gave her extensive plastic surgery. And we had to keep her in a highly oxygenated environment, but now she's ready to come out." That seemed weird to me as an explanation of why she's been in this stone casket.
He had to work with what he was given and what he had available to him. And how could you create a hyperbaric chamber on the fly with no medical supplies?
Yeah.
So you can kind of explain it. The part I have a big problem with is the overall story itself. So you're a big hero because you performed extensive plastic surgery on a woman who was ugly? Wait. Oh.
They supposedly did more than just plastic surgery because they gave her tits. Well, it's plastic surgery, but still. They unmask her to a bunch of oohs and ahs. And honestly, I'm sure this actress is a lovely woman and she is attractive, but I was expecting like prettier than Gina Davis, like saying that she was ugly and they gave her plastic surgery. I was expecting somebody way better looking than this, honestly, to come out of the wraps. She looked average.
Here I am talking about how sad I am that they got so superficial and ruined my moral of the story. And you're over here picking it apart because she ain't pretty enough.
Because that would make it at least mildly acceptable that they are doing this stupid story of, well, she was ugly and we had to help her.
Oh, I get what you're saying. You're like, really? Supermodel. Well, you didn't help her enough.
That would have been the joke, right? Like Cindy Crawford or something. That would have been the payoff.
Yes. Well, maybe they called Christie Brinkley and she just didn't answer. I don't know.
So they go, "That wasn't enough. There's more. But wait, there's more. We also gave her a body lift." And I'm like, what? That means tits, because grabs her little small C-cup size breasts and squeezes them. So clearly they're natural. They're not silicone. "I never counted on bazonkers," she says. "I'm so content." So you weren't attractive and you had no boobs, supposedly. Oh, life's rough.
Yeah.
So then the real piece of shit of this movie, the inspector, calls out Radu and Loopy and shames them for procreating to make a hunchback little boy who is, frankly, pretty stinking adorable.
Yeah, he's so cute. We didn't know that they have a kid until this moment, but this whole thing is so sad when he starts insulting and berating them, and then Radu has just had enough and just goes off on this his little tirade about, you know, you can say what you want about me, but the minute you start insulting my child, and that's when I'm like, okay, thank you. There, now I've forgotten all about this stupid plastic surgery nonsense, and we're back to the movie has a heart.
Yes, you can say what you want about me and my son, me, but not my son or my wife. We deserve respect. And then he stands up. His hunch is gone. He stands up and Loopy leans down and she goes, "Stand up straight," to the little boy. And he stands up. And I thought, that's all fine and good. But if you have a medical condition, you can't just straighten your spine out magically by yourself like that.
I think that's the whole point. Not a single one of them has a medical condition. Radu. Yeah. Walks around hunched over like that, calling everyone master because he sees himself as a servant and lower than and not enough. Loopy does it out of solidarity. We've seen her do many things where she puts herself in stupid situations or in danger just to, you know, be right there next to him. So she does it too. And of course, if they raise a child, their child's going to do it too. Loopy and their child did not realize there is no reason to walk around like this. We can stand up straight. Not until he does, because he leads and they follow.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So it's actually like, it's really sweet seeing him stand up for himself and get his self-respect back. Then they both realize, hey, yeah, we can follow dad and do the same thing.
And then you have this weird moment, though. The doc comes up to Radu and Loopy and kind of puts his arms around him and they're hugging. And he makes a joke that he goes all mad scientist on him. And I'm like, wait a minute. So he's consciously, he knows he does this mm-hmm. because he can joke about it?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Oh, clearly. Yeah.
But then he goes, oh, I love you guys. And it's such a cute little moment with them. Then we cut to Jack and Elizabeth standing real close. And he makes her dispose of her broken wine bottle. And then leans in for a kiss. Gil climbs up into the carriage with Odette because she won't come out. T- takes her fake teeth out, her vampire teeth. She says that she wears them because they get her attention, because she's ugly. If you walk around in an outfit like that, how ugly could you feel?
Well, I think that's the point. That what they're trying to say here is that she literally vamps herself up and wears this incredibly revealing outfit and walks around acting oversexed because she is incredibly self-conscious and has self-esteem problems. How many girls have you known who dress and behave in a very provocative way to overcompensate for their low self-esteem? So it's kind of a sweet little moment when he takes the teeth out and he's like, you don't need these. You don't need to do that. It's so cute.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
She makes a comment, though, about my nose. And the doc leans over and he goes, I gave her a nose job.
But I have to put it out there. If Gina Davis thinks that she's ugly, there is no hope for the rest of us. None at all. Wow.
I always think that when she says that. I'm like, bitch, do you even own a mirror? Because you wrong.
But another good point about women. How many beautiful women have you known who do not see themselves as beautiful?
Oh, God, ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth?
So it's kind of like, okay, now they're back around to making yet another kind of poignant and beautiful point here. I like it.
Then we cut to everybody on the dance floor. The music's playing. Everyone's happy. Gil tells Jack, the story will definitely be believed by my father. Don't worry, because I'm going to have the pictures to prove it. And he pulls out a camera. He starts snapping photos of everything. And he says, my father will have a field day with these pictures. And it's so cute because we end on a snapshot of Hunyadi holding a balloon, smiling and dancing.
He is living his best life. He loves the wine festival.
And then we just cut to, while the music's playing, some crazy newspaper headlines accompanied by these photos. So number one, we get Hunyadi, and it says, Frankenstein lives, reveals enormous bolt.
He revealed his enormous bolt.
And I had to pause on several of these to check. All the fine print, like of the actual story that goes with these headlines, is gobbledygook. Mm-hmm. And it's weird shit that says, like, and then the company was going to be tenured and purchased, and then they were declined by the construction of the city and the building. And it's just all this weird random nonsense that has nothing to do with anything.
So it's like they used a real newspaper and just put their photo and headline on it.
Yeah. They're not cohesive, though. Like the paragraphs, they don't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like they cut and pasted just newspaper clippings to make it look correct. Well, back in the day, if you paused a VHS tape, you couldn't see anything. All you saw was fuzz.
Right. They never expected anybody to do that now. I watch Let's Make a Deal, and they always have fake newspapers, and I always pause them and read the fine print, and they are legit really funny fine print things that have to do with the show or whatever. Mm-hmm. This, I was hoping, would be like that, and it wasn't. It was just gobbledygook. So the second one, we get transvestite exposed, and it's a picture of not-so-ugly Hattie, and it says, mummy, really a daddy. And I'm like, wait a minute. They gave her bazonkers, but she's a daddy?
Yeah, that one, that and the whole backstory of the mummy in general, let's just throw that right out and pretend it doesn't exist, because the whole thing's a little weird and offensive and gross. I'm not into it.
Number three, we get the bald, hairless Wolfman pick, and it says Wolfman cured, wins surfing contest.
He finally went to the beach.
Then we get the fourth picture, killer bees found in Gypsy's wrinkles, and it's Madame Morovia. I just wanted something about her smelling bad because her son made that comment earlier, which I thought was weird. The fifth one is Butler Comic plays Royal Rock Concert, barfs on Prince, and it's Phaos.
That's my favorite one.
What royal concert? What prince? I want more details.
What, did he open for the Stones or something? Like, what? How is he? Apparently he made it. He made it with his, his doll, his little sidekick. He turned that into an act. I don't get it, but.
I'd go. I'd see that.
Yeah, I would totally see him like too. That and the banana peel, I'm done. He got me in stitches.
So the sixth picture that pops up is the doc with his crazy hair. And it says, doctor performs vasectomy on himself. Okay.
Could you imagine?
With his equipment too. It's like, ooh. No. Number seven, we get Odette. It says, vampire sucks town dry. Take that how you will.
Oh, boy.
And the final picture is Radu and Loopy. It says, servant and wife confess. We never had a real hump.
Jesus.
fade to black, roll credits.
The ending kind of lets me down in a few ways, but overall, I'm always still so just tickled and happy and in a great mood after I watch this movie, because I just laugh so much watching it.
All right. You want to roll the three questions?
Let's do it.
All right. Question one. Should this movie, in the era we live in, get a reworking or remake of any kind?
I almost feel like the answer to that is an obvious yes, because there's something there. With the story that they were attempting to tell, there's something there. You could definitely take out everything that is offensive and not politically correct and doesn't jive with what you're trying to say. Everything that goes against the moral of the story, you could take those things out and right the wrongs, fix the things that really do a disservice to women and make it really hit home. But you would have to maintain that absurdity and the ad lib comedy and letting people go and just do their thing. Like, it would be a very delicate balance between getting that moral of the story correct and keeping how funny this movie is. Keep that in there. I don't know. It depends on who you're going to cast. And let me see the script first. I want final approval.
So my answer is opposite. I'm a no. I think you'd have to change too much in order for it to work as a remake, maybe rework it a little. I think, though, the 80s time capsule of it all, with the cheesy schlock, Mel Brooksy humor, the cast can't be duplicated. I feel like, yeah, no, don't touch it.
Yeah, so. I guess what I'm proposing is not a remake. It's a reimagining.
Yeah.
Take some of the idea and take it in a better direction that makes a little more sense and isn't nearly as offensive. But damn it, you better cast it correctly and keep that absurd sense of humor, or else I will pan it.
All right, question two. Knowing how there is a logical explanation for each of the quote-unquote monsters in this film, what monster was missing that could have been fun, and how would you have explained their mistaken monstrous identity?
I've never thought about that. Well, all the kind of classic universal monsters are there, except the creature from the Black Lagoon. So the mayor makes a joke about it, but I feel like you even had that moment with the water and the contortionist guy was in there. You maybe could have done something there and come up with some sort of interesting explanation for why someone is half fish and half human. I don't know.
Maybe just weird genetic testing gone wrong on Malavacha's part or something.
Who knows? Yeah, I don't quite know how to explain it away, which is probably why they didn't do it. They used every classic monster that you could make look mostly human and could have a medical explanation for their condition. I can't really think of another one where that's doable.
So for me, come up with one. Yeah. So the creature was on my list because I thought maybe genetic testing. But again, that doesn't really fall in like I was trying to help him.
Right.
I went with Invisible Man. Maybe Malavacha came up with, as best he could, some kind of serum for like an illness. And it made him turn invisible as a side effect. But again, how do you film the invisible? Like, that would have been kind of boring too.
That would have been kind of weird. Yeah.
But it's all I could come up with. Yeah. Because I was pressed really thinking about that one. All right. Question three. We're going to play Mary Fuck Kill.
Oh, God. but not with this movie.
I'm not going to assign them. I'm going to let you pick your own. So anybody in the movie is fair game. Big player to bit player. Mary Fuck Kill.
Oh, boy. Well, I have to marry Jeff Goldblum.
So you marry Jack, okay?
I have to marry him, yes. Because then, you know, every day and twice on Sunday for the rest of my life, I'll take it. So the fuck, I would say that's going to be Gil at Begley Jr. There's just something so endearing and adorable about him. I think I could handle it once. Yeah, for sure. And then the kill, there's so many options. I'd have to go with the mayor.
Okay.
I'd have to go with the mayor. And that's just because that there's something about him that seems off and I would like to get rid of him. So I'll just leave it at that.
He's off. Okay. That's
well, fair. I think we know why he gives that quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, so I would take the opportunity for sure.
All right. So for me, I'd marry Jack. Same as you. We'll have to share him.
How could you not?
Right. I'm going to fuck Odette. I mean, come on. Gina Davis in that outfit. And I'm going to kill the inspector. because he's just a straight piece of shit.
Straight he really up. Is.
Fuck that guy. Okay, so that is going to wrap up our discussion on Transylvania 65,000, unless there's something I forgot that you wanted to throw out there.
Not really, no. No, there's nothing. I feel like we really touched on absolutely everything that makes this movie a forgotten gem.
Agreed. And that puts me nicely right into where to watch this, because listeners, if you have not seen this movie, or if you have not seen it in a long time, you are due for a rewatch, sirs and madams, let me tell you. It is currently, at the time of this recording, available on Amazon Prime with subscription. It is on YouTube TV. It's also free on Plex or Tubi. I don't know how cut up it would be on Tubi, but still worth a watch for free if you don't want to pay for it. Thank you, ma'am, for joining me. This was a blast from the past. I love recording with you.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad we finally got to talk about this movie again, because this was one of the ones that inspired us to think about doing this in the first place. This movie and others in this vein. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it's full circle. It's a full circle moment.
All right, listeners, if you want to hear all of the back catalog episodes, with the exception of Children of the Corn 2, all the rest of the episodes with Nikki Flicks are available on our Patreon. That is patreon.com/letstalkturkeys. And we want to thank you all for listening to this episode and subscribing on Spotify or wherever you get podcasts. And until next time, goodbye. Listeners, Movie Miss here, saying we know you have a lot of options when it comes to podcasts, so we want to thank you so much for listening to ours. Please make sure to find us on our socials and join us. Be part of our bad movie conversations. We want to chat with you. We're on Facebook with an official page, as well as a Let's Talk Turkeys discussion group, where you can talk with other like-minded individuals who like bad movies. We're on Instagram at Let's Talk Turkeys. Our Twitter handle is at Gobble Podcast. That's GOBBLEPODCAST. And of course, you can always email us direct. We would love to get suggestions from you of movies you would like us to cover. If you want to be a guest on the show, we would love that. So directly, that's Let's Talk Turkeys, all one word, at yahoo.com.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.